Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
So the cattle report, which is a survey that encompasses basically all feedlots, the report estimated there was about 13 million even head of cattle in feedlots. That compares to 13.1 million head of cattle in 2023, so about 1% less than 2 years ago.
Michael McConnell is a USDA livestock analyst on USDA cattle numbers.
By comparison, the cattle on feed report, which also came out, that survey is just relatively larger feedlots. So that encompasses just feedlots with over 1,000 head capacity. So by comparison, as of July 1st, that report estimated that we have 11.1 million head of cattle, which is about 2% less than what we had this time last year. The majority of animals are accounted for in those feedlots that are over 1,000 head, but the cattle report, which we don't get monthly, we only get it on a semi-annual basis, that provides a little bit more of a comprehensive look on how many cattle there are in feedlots, ultimately destined for beef production.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The U.S. and European Union have reached a framework trade agreement, avoiding a major tariff escalation. It also opens new opportunities for U.S. ag exports. Under the deal announced on Sunday, most EU goods entering the U.S. will now face a 15% baseline tariff, avoiding the 30% level previously proposed by the White House. In return, both sides agreed to eliminate tariffs entirely on key strategic products. Among those zero tariff items that are selected, ag products, giving U.S. exporters new access to the European market for beef, pork, grains, and processed foods. According to Reuters, additional zero tariff categories include aircraft parts, critical minerals, generic pharmaceuticals, and semiconductor equipment. Although steep tariffs on European steel and aluminum remain in place for now, those are expected to be addressed in a follow-up quota-based system. EU also committed to purchasing $750 billion in U.S. energy over 3 years, along with $600 billion in industrial investment. Agreement mirrors a similar 2024 deal between the U.S. and Japan, still needs to be ratified by the European Parliament and individual EU nations before taking effect. U.S. cattle on feed numbers drop below expectations in USDA's July report. As of July 1st, feedlots with 1,000 or more head held 11.1 million cattle and calves, a 2% decline from last year. It's the smallest July total since 2017. That figure came in even lower than the most conservative pre-report trade estimates. Steer inventory rose 1%, 6.88 million head. That represents 62% of the total. Meanwhile, the number of heifers declined 5% to 4.24 million head. And according to Oklahoma State University Extension Livestock Marketing Specialist Dr. Darrell Peel, the ratio of heifers and feedlots remains above the long-term average, suggesting that herd rebuilding is progressing slowly, if at all. June placements totaled 1.44 million head, 8% lower than a year ago, the lowest June total since 2009. Analysts had expected a more modest drop. Marketing's also soft at 1.71 million head, down 4% from a year earlier, marking the lowest June level since USDA began tracking the data back into 1996. USDA's July cattle inventory report shows the nation's cattle herd is still shrinking. As of the 1st of July, there were 94.2 million head of cattle and calves in the U.S., down 1% from 2023. That includes a total 38.1 million cows and heifers that have calved. That's 1% lower than 2 years ago. Beef cows dropped to 28.7 million head, while milk cows increased slightly to 9.45 million. And USDA's cold storage report for June showed varied movements across major food categories. Cheese inventories were up slightly from May, but down compared to June. Butter stocks declined 3%. Total frozen poultry supplies increasing 4% month over month. Chicken stocks up 1% from May, 3% higher than last June. Turkey stocks up 8% from May, 16% below last year. And red meat stocks fell 4% from May and 7% year over year. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We've reached a deal. It's a good deal for everybody, I believe.
President Donald Trump meeting with EU negotiators in Scotland.
It's, I think you were saying, this is probably the biggest deal ever reached in any capacity, trade or beyond trade.
It is.
It's a giant deal with lots of countries, because, as you know, Ursula represents a lot of countries, not one country. It's not easy for you. That's because a lot of very different countries, great countries, but some are strong with cars, some are strong with agriculture, some are strong with both, right? You have a lot of different factors. So we're going to do the following. The European Union is going to agree to purchase from the United States $750 billion worth of energy. $750 billion worth of energy. They are going to agree to invest into the United States $600 billion more than they're investing already. So they're investing a large amount of money. You know what that amount of money is. It's very substantial, but they're going to invest an additional $600 billion. They're agreeing to open up their countries to trade at zero tariff. So that's a very big factor. Opening up their countries, all of the countries will be opened up to trade with the United States at zero tariff. And they're agreeing to purchase a vast amount of military equipment. We don't know what that number is, but it's the good news is we make the best military equipment in the world, so sort of you have to do that. I mean, until somebody tops us, which is not going to happen. We're way ahead of every other country in terms of the quality of the military equipment. You saw that recently in Iran, and you see that, unfortunately, you see that often for all the wrong reasons, right? So those things are $750 billion, $600 billion, opening up the country. We are agreeing that the tariff straight across for automobiles and everything else will be a straight across tariff of 15%. So we have a tariff of 15%. We have the opening up of all of the European countries, which I think I could say were essentially closed. I mean, you weren't exactly taking our autos, you weren't exactly taking our agriculture. And then you would have smaller things, but for the most part, it was closed. And now it's open. It's open for our companies to go in and do a good job with it. I think you'll like them. I think you'll like it. And we will, very importantly, they'll be investing a lot of money, but the military is a big number, but that's one number we're not determining. It's going to be whatever it is, but they're going to be purchasing hundreds of billions of dollars worth of military equipment. Very importantly, they're going to purchase $750 billion worth of energy. So that's going to be great. And $600 billion worth of investments into the United States over and above what they have. So, and I think that basically concludes the deal. I mean, those are the main factors. I don't think there are too many other factors other than we're going to get along great. And we have a great relationship now with NATO, which is largely the same. I mean, not exactly, but pretty close, right? Largely. And with NATO, as you know, they're going up to 5% from 2%. And the relationship is very strong with NATO.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
My name is Don Cameron, a vice president, general manager at Terra Nova Ranch in Helm, which is in the San Joaquin Valley of California.
He was testifying recently before the House Ag Committee, a hearing on innovations in crop protection.
You heard we farm quite a few different crops. Jim missed a few, but I'm not going to bring those up. But we do farm a wide variety of different specialty crops on the farm. As I said, we... our capacities as a farmer have included being president of the California State Board of Food and Agriculture, which advises the California Secretary of Ag and the governor on issues in agriculture for our state. And I'm also a Western Growers board member. Farmers are in the business of providing healthy, nutritious food. The ever-increasing cost of input, seed, water, energy, and labor make for thin margins without room for error. To ensure my livelihood and that food arrives at your grocery store, restaurants, and schools, I must protect my crops from pests and disease. I can assure you, with all the costs of doing business and its associated regulatory burdens, farmers don't have slush funds to waste money on crop inputs that are not absolutely necessary. As a farmer, I'm aware of consumer apprehension about the use of pesticides, and in turn, retail grocery stores and restaurants that have also been sensitized to this issue. As a father and grandfather, I'm sympathetic to the consumer concerns when hearing about pesticides in the media. Sometimes we look past the fact that pesticides are regulated extensively by EPA with support from USDA, FDA, and state agencies to ensure that they are safe for human health and for the environment under the intended use using scientific data. The Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, FIFRA, mandates rigorous risk assessments to determine any necessary mitigation measures that must be taken before a product can be registered and safely applied. Fruit and vegetable growers must meet a high standard for quality demanded by consumers. In today's culture, where shoppers often bypass slightly bruised produce in favor of perfect-looking fruits and vegetables, the pressure on farmers to deliver flawless crops is immense. To support consumer expectations and public health goals centered around nutritious diets, a full range of innovative crop protection tools, including pesticides, is essential to ensure the reliable production of appealing, high-quality fresh produce. Growers have been investing in crop innovations for a long time and are making great strides to reduce reliance on traditional pesticides, increase crop resilience, and diversify with innovative technologies. The agriculture industry needs your backing in these efforts, including research and support for novel technologies. The Trump administration recently released the Make America Healthy Again, MAHA report, which spotlights the importance of and access to a healthy diet and can spur collaborations toward innovative tools to address concerns while cultivating a viable future for domestically produced fruits and vegetables safeguarded from pests and diseases. I'd like to highlight a few recommendations. You'll find more in my written testimony that will accelerate innovation, including at the USDA. The IR4 project is a key resource for specialty crop industry, and we support increased funding to enable continued work with novel crop protection technologies for specialty crops, including biological crops or products.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We have good news.
We have a deal.
President Donald Trump, along with Ursula von der Leyen, European Commission President, on the signing of a historic trade deal.
We have a trade deal between the two largest economies in the world. And it's a big deal. It's a huge deal. It will bring stability. It will bring predictability. That's very important for our businesses on both sides of the Atlantic. It's 15% tariffs across the board, all inclusive. The investments Mr. President just described, that are going to go to the United States and the purchases over there. Indeed, basically, the European market is open. It's 450 million people. So it's a good deal. It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
It was tough negotiations. I knew it at the beginning, and it was indeed very tough, but we came to good conclusions for both sides. So again, congratulations and many thanks.
So what does the EU get?
So the starting point was an imbalance, a surplus on our side and a deficit on the US side. And we wanted to rebalance the trade relation. And we wanted to do it in a way that trade goes on between the two of us across the Atlantic, because the two biggest economies should have a good trade flow between us. And I think we hit exactly the point we wanted to find. Rebalance, but enable trade on both sides, which means good jobs on both sides of the Atlantic, means prosperity on both sides of the Atlantic, and that was important for us.
Two sectors important to the president, automobiles and agriculture.
Cars basically were not invited, were not I don't know if the word is not allowed or just, you know, you just kept them out somehow, right? But cars will be, you know, we have some cars that do terrific business, and very, we do really well with the pickup trucks, with the SUVs. We have some great things, and I think the people of Europe will have some diversification. I think that'll make them happy. So I think maybe cars would be the one that would go the biggest, and the second would be agriculture, the farmers. And we'll do it in very strict conjunction with the president and the European Union. And they're coming into, likewise, they're coming into our country with great vigor. And I think they're going to make a lot of money with this. I think everybody is. I think it, and again, it's going to bring a lot of unity and friendship. It's going to work out really well.
And what about the next big deal?
That's an interesting question. This was the big one. This is the biggest of them all. Yeah. We're looking at deals with three or four other countries. But for the most part, you know, I can't get them to understand that it's the letter. We just sent that letter, and that letter is, you know, very universal for most. I mean, most, you wouldn't be able to do this. You wouldn't have the time or the patience to be able to do a deal like this. Most of the others are going to be a certain tariff, and we're going to keep it as low as we can. They're generally smaller countries or countries we don't do much business with. But that they've already received, to a large extent, they've received a letter. They'll probably receive a letter of clarification or a confirmation-type letter,
exactly,
which will go out sometime during this week,
right,
prior to August 1st. And the tariffs will start being paid by those countries prior to August, you know, on August 1st and beyond.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
A few minutes ago, Altman, OpenAI, was down the hallway. He and I had a few minutes of conversation about a new healthcare stack that's going to go public in about a month. And he seemed incredibly optimistic that its accuracy will be off the charts. Should we legalize the use of technology to help our society be healthier? Should we allow it to prescribe?
Chairman of the Joint Economic Committee in Congress is Representative David Schweikert of Arizona.
It's uncomfortable because this place is a protection racket. You've got to understand, Congress is mostly about one thing. It's about money. And the left pretends it isn't. The right pretends it's about money. And when you start to say, hey, maybe we could use technology as a competition to help our brothers and sisters be healthier and therefore change the cost of health care, someone's going to look at you and say, but I make money on that. You're going to now have me compete against a data system that's more accurate than I am. But over and over, new Apple Watch AI model can reveal hidden health conditions. Here's a couple of the things I've been most interested in last couple of years. Great article. I have a huge one. I did a whole speech on it a couple of years ago. AI discovered a whole new category of antibiotics. So you remember, we were all panic-stricken that we had diseases, bacterial infections that we didn't have antibiotics for, the antibiotics weren't working, and AI designed a whole new category of antibiotics that in the literature said it would have taken humans 20 years to develop. Instead of being afraid of the technology, maybe we get our heads straightened up saying, in a society where we have a shortage of young people, our baby boomers like me with gray hair, we're getting older, we're going to consume a lot more healthcare. Can we embrace the technology? And that technology lets us free when you start to realize the things that are going on. We just had a doctor, a radiologist in our office, walking us through a statistical abstract on breast cancers and the scans and showing that his AI platform is remarkably more accurate, cheaper, faster, and more accurate. Why wouldn't we embrace that, except we don't reimburse it? Because the barriers to entry here are protection rackets saying we're not fighting for what's the fastest, bestest, cheapest. We're often here because we know our incumbency. And look, we really are on the edge of miracles. How do I get the left, the right, to understand the math is the math. Demographics are the primary driver of U.S. sovereign debt. Now, it's hard to campaign against the other side on that, but you know, maybe we could take a couple months off and actually do good quality policy and legalize properly vetted, properly certified AI to prescribe. The wearables. This August, I'm going to do an experiment with this Oura Ring, and I'm buying some Dexcoms to manage my... Have you all seen the app where you can take a picture of your food, and it calculates its glucose and its calories? How do we create the incentives? Maybe we should look at the ACA, and instead of just smoking in three age categories, we could add a fifth category that's an incentive for our brothers and sisters that if you manage your health... 16% of U.S. healthcare is people not taking their drugs for their hypertension, for their statin. 16% is over $600 billion a year. There are solutions. We can make a difference. Embrace the technology, change the cost, have a healthier society, and it's the most powerful thing we can do for U.S. sovereign debt.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Changes to the commodity program safety net, some changes to crop insurance and disaster assistance programs, and some other additional items throughout the farm legislation were a big plus up here for producers in this reconciliation bill.
Also known as the One Big Beautiful Bill, Brad Lubin is an economist with the University of Nebraska at Lincoln.
These are changes that are to take effect for the 2025 crop year, which obviously we're well into already. Producers already made an enrollment decision for 25, but we won't be going back to recalculate and make a new ARC versus PLC decision. The legislation wrote in here a one-time sort of free pass that says the program will simply pay the higher of ARC or PLC to producers this year. The decision between ARC and PLC would return next year in 2026. But for the present year, we've passed legislation well into the year, and we're just simply going to bump up the support levels to the higher of.
Though a farm bill has been stalled, much of what's needed is in this bill.
Seems like agriculture got much or even most of what it really hoped for with new legislation. It got increased farm program support. It got some increased and improved certainty in conservation funding and other areas. It also saw... rather importantly, some substantial tax policy changes that would extend some of the 2017 tax legislation. It saw some bioenergy policy and tax incentive policy for renewable fuels that would help support the sector. Ag got much of what it might have asked for in terms of a farm bill or other related federal legislation, almost like it's Christmas in July, if you're familiar with one of the popular jingles from a local Lincoln, Nebraska area commercial. Ag got much of what it asked for, even as other organizations or other sectors and other programs took some rather dramatic cuts, particularly the food assistance components of what traditionally has been a farm and food farm bill. While the ag commodity programs and ag support saw increases of $60 billion or more over 10 years, the food assistance program saw cuts of nearly $200 billion over that same time frame. And while much of the focus might have been on how to reform the program and rectify certain eligibility rules or payment calculations and other fraud or waste and abuse, it fundamentally still amounts to a cut in food assistance spending, which leave a lot of people in the traditional farm and food coalition wondering how the farm side got a substantial increase while the food side took a major cut. That's traditionally the coalition that both sides had to win to get a farm bill across the finish line. Well, we went through the reconciliation process here, and that required only a majority vote to get it to the finish line, so both sides didn't have to win specifically this time. But it's unclear what that means for the future, because we still have some farm bill programs and issues to resolve. Not everything could be addressed through the reconciliation process and the funding component of it. So there are still policy issues relating to the underlying farm bill that are still due to expire this September unless they're addressed. And trying to determine either the willingness or the attitude for some sort of bipartisan political policy development here going into the fall – is a really interesting question right now.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
You're ahead of cattle in feedlots per USDA's July Cattle on Feed report.
And a lot of this is due to the fact that we had relatively slower placements during the month of June, as feeder cattle outside feedlots right now are getting relatively tight and pretty expensive for feedlots to replace. And that combined with the fact that we're at a relatively low point in our cattle cycle. So just overall, we're looking at relatively tight supplies of cattle, both outside the feedlot coming in for placement, as well as inside the feedlot being marketed for beef production.
Agriculture Department livestock analyst Michael McConnell breaks down the cattle and calves on feed numbers as of July 1st.
There was 11.1 million cattle on feedlots with capacity of more than 1,000 head. That's 2% lower than a year ago. During the month of June, 1.4 million head of cattle were placed into feedlots, which is 8% lower than a year ago. And 1.7 million head of cattle were marketed from those feedlots, which is about 4% lower than last year.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.